The goal is not to create a new illness. The good news is there's obviously new research, which is exciting, but I think it's just to give a more accurate name to a disease that has been very much misunderstood and undertreated.
This is a Baby Brunch podcast. Curaprox aims to create 1 billion healthy smiles. A healthy mouth means a healthy body and mind, creating better health for you. Great oral health starts from day one. It's never too early to start. Curaprox Baby gets your child on the right path of starting healthy oral care habits for life. This podcast is supported by Epimax, the dermatologist-recommended skincare range specifically formulated to hydrate, soothe, and protect. Whether it's dry skin, sensitive skin, or just everyday moisture, Epimax has a solution for everybody. Fragrance-free, hypoallergenic, and suitable for all ages. Welcome to another Baby Brunch podcast. There's a name change at hand and I didn't see it anywhere. I saw it on a doctor's Instagram. So what did I do? I brought in Dr. Jung. She's been on our podcasts before and she brought us such amazing information about menopause and perimenopause. And today we're covering PCOS that has had a name change to PMOS. Why is this significant? It's significant for being seen as a woman to understand more about this syndrome and also to be diagnosed, because up until now, I think it was misleading. Well, we are unpacking this in this interview today and in this podcast on Baby Brunch. PCOS is getting a new name, polyendocrine metabolic ovarian syndrome, PMOS. Researchers and doctors say the old name is misleading because most women with PCOS does not actually have ovarian cysts. PMOS affects 1 in 8 women and is much more than just a fertility or a period problem. Dr. Joandri, hoe gaan het? Thanks for joining us today on Baby Brunch. It's really good to see you. Thanks for sharing the article, first of all, on Instagram, because that's where I saw it. And thanks for joining us for this interview.
Thank you for inviting me, Ilana. It's always nice to see you.
So we are now learning that this is not just about hormones and about cysts. In fact, it's not about cysts at all.
Absolutely. I think there's millions of women out there actually that have been more excited about the name change than I am, because finally they're being heard. Finally, all of the years of just being classified as having an ovarian problem or a reproductive problem or a cyst problem, which wasn't even cysts, by the way, finally, it is recognized that all of the things that they have been complaining about was not in their heads, and that hopefully they will be stopped, that people will stop dismissing them.
Researchers and doctors say the old name, which was polycystic ovary syndrome, is misleading. It says because most women with PCOS do not actually have ovarian cysts. According to the article that I read on your Instagram feed, it also says PMOS now affects 1 in 8 women and is much more than a fertility or a period problem. So wait a minute. Up until now, we didn't realize that then PCOS, now PMOS, affects more than your hormones and weight and insulin, but also your mental health, sleep, skin, I didn't know that, heart health, and overall well-being. So are you trying to tell me that the word PCOS was misleading?
So PCOS stood for polycystic ovarian syndrome, and which came from the appearance of multiple follicles, arrested small follicles on ultrasound. So it was never really even a cyst problem. It wasn't a true ovarian cyst. And for a very long time, women have been misdiagnosed because maybe they don't have the cysts, but they have all of the other symptoms. And all of the other symptoms have sort of always been part of the whole picture. But I think due to lack of education, a lot of women have been dismissed or ignored, or symptoms were treated separately instead of accepting that it's actually a whole system problem.
So when we think of PCOS, what did it refer to? So are we talking Hormones, are there hormones involved? Is it a metabolic issue that we're having? Is it about our ovaries? When we used to talk about PCOS, what was it about in simple terms?
So, in simple terms, women would present with women or adolescent girls would present with irregular cycles. So their cycles would be spaced far apart, or they would stop menstruating, or they would have heavy menstrual periods. Or later in life, women would have fertility issues. They would have difficulty falling pregnant. And then generally, we would send, there are certain blood tests that we would do, but I don't think as a standard, the metabolic profile or the endocrine profile, which is now so nicely involved in the name, was ever truly investigated or seen as a whole. These cysts that you see is they are not, it's when there are too many follicles, so the brain can't properly communicate. There's a miscommunication between the brain and the ovaries, and then these are arrested follicles that just lie there and cause multiple problems. So polyendocrine metabolic ovarian syndrome includes everything. The polyendocrine means that more than one hormone system is involved. So we've got the androgens, which is the like your traditionally male hormones, insulin, all of your reproductive hormones, and then metabolic automatically shifts the gear to insulin resistance and glucose control and weight management and the and also cardiometabolic health. And this is a lifelong syndrome which needs to be managed and picked up early. The ovarian obviously still keeps the reproductive and ovulatory side, which is very important. But this new name change will also force the attention to the whole body picture instead of just focusing.
I was going to ask you that. So seeing that PCOS is now PMOS, what is the aim? I mean, for us it's revolutionary because now it's about your entire well-being. It's not just about ovarian cysts, which is what we thought it was initially. But what is the goal with the name change?
The goal is not to create a new illness. The good news is there's obviously new research, which is exciting, but I think it's just to give a more accurate name to a disease that has been very much misunderstood and undertreated. The other thing about the name is that it improves awareness. It also reduces the stigma that is so typically linked to peak. Well, now PMOS, and it supports earlier diagnosis, and it helps promote a holistic treatment. So holistic is a word that is so often misused, but this is truly, it's a holistic illness. And I think that is what the name is definitely going to do, so that women can also finally feel that their symptoms are being taken seriously.
That we're being heard, right?
Yes, it takes it away from just the ovaries and the cysts, and then it takes it back to the whole person.
Okay, so let's talk about the whole person. Used to be PCOS, now PMOS. When I got to learn about PCOS, I remember we did an interview many, many years ago on Baby Brunch. We were talking about Baby Brunch and women's health. And we learned that it affects teenagers and moms and people's fertility journeys and pregnancy and even your mental health, your confidence. So, if we think of PMOS, does this mean that the language is now simpler even for us as moms and as teenagers and young women? Do you think the name change from PCOS to PMOS is making us even understand it better? That is suffering or that is struggling with PCOS, PMOS?
I think it just raises more awareness to the whole body picture because to call something polyendocrine metabolic ovarian syndrome, those are very long words. But I think that it raises awareness, especially amongst physicians, so that when that mom sees that her daughter is even after 3 years into her period, she's still having irregular periods, or if a woman struggles to fall pregnant and they go and seek for help, that when a general practitioner or a gynecologist, well, the gynies are great at it anyway, but when they hear the symptoms as a whole, that It puts the word together, it puts the name together. And the fact that the name has been changed, like you said, there's awareness. You saw it on my Instagram, because they and questions are being asked, and people are asking me about it, and they're asking their own general practitioners. So I don't think necessarily the word makes it more simple, but the word just explains it so much better and forces the thought towards not fixing just the ovaries, but also looking at the rest of the human mental health, skin, and not just in isolation.
Well, seeing that this is about our entire well-being and it's not just in isolation to do with our ovaries of ons hare of oh jy voel nie lekker nie of dis 'n hormoon ding, you know, it's not just a hormonal thing. There's some of us that's hearing this for the first time or that's just struggling to still have it diagnosed or understand it. So, I mean, I think it is important to, while we're talking about name changes and how exciting it is for most of us, what are some of the early signs? If I'm a parent listening to this podcast or watching this video, what should we notice in young women and in teenagers and in ourselves when we are looking out, whether you have PMOS or not?
The main symptoms that women can present with, or the most important ones, are either linked to the endocrine side, which is the insulin resistance and the androgens. Insulin side can be uncontrolled blood glucose, weight gain, irrespective of sort of eating correctly. It can include hair loss, facial hair. In young girls, they could have dark patches, especially under the arms, that could sort of show more towards insulin resistance, maybe abnormal cholesterol tests. But in terms of the menstruation, if you have less than 8 cycles per year, or the cycles remain consistently more than 35 days apart, that means that it is something to look out for. Or if you have very heavy periods, or if people fail to fall pregnant within a year, these are all warning signs. Or sometimes someone would just say, I keep on doing these dipsticks, but nothing happens. I think the big problem in terms of fertility as well is when girls have irregular periods, the tradition is to put them on the pill to regulate those periods. So for very long times, their periods are being regulated for them without having a look at the metabolic side and the hair loss and the facial hair and the mental side, and looking at their cholesterol and the glucose. So then when they finally stop and they want to fall pregnant, then they have no idea about the diagnosis because they've never really investigated properly these abnormal menstrual periods.
It's just so interesting because when we did our pieces on menopause, with your discussion as well on perimenopause, if I think of women, young women, us as mothers, and even people like myself who's in perimenopause and in menopause, there's just so many symptoms for all these things. I mean, when you describe the symptoms of PCOS, I can go, hey, that's me, you know? Why are so
Yeah.
many, right? Why are so many women going undiagnosed for years? And my second question to that is, if going on to the pill regulates the period, how do we ask our practitioners? Actually, I'm going to get to that in a while. Why do so many women go undiagnosed if our practitioners, if you know what PCOS now PMOS is?
Generally, the symptoms are being treated separately. If someone comes in with acne, we treat the acne problem. If someone has irregular periods, we focus maybe on the hormones, or patients are basically given oral contraceptive pills just to make their lives easier. If it's a heavy bleed, it makes their lives easier. So those symptoms are marked by the pill. Weight gain may be very unnecessarily blamed on lifestyle, and that with fertility, it's only actually investigated a lot later. So many women were told that they don't have PCOS because they didn't have the obvious cysts, which again, it's not a typical cyst, it's just multiple little ovarian follicles, but they didn't have the sign on the ultrasound. Or others were told, no, they just need to eat less, or they just need to just sleep more. I think, to be honest, it feels like women And maybe men, I don't know. I don't see enough of them, but it's like patients aren't necessarily always being listened to. And just non-specific symptoms are dismissed. But I think now with the new name and all of the publicity that it's getting, that's making me very happy. If someone recognizes acne, hopefully that will prompt them to ask more questions. Ask more questions, talk about ovulation. If someone is on the pill, that can maybe stop the pill for a while and see if there are any other things. Patients having difficulty losing weight, but they're eating correctly and they've got the lifestyle thing. Listen to them. They're not lying. My patients tell me if they had two Cadbury slabs over a weekend. Patients are generally a lot more honest than is generally believed to be. I think it's a listening problem in a certain extent, and the fact that we are categorizing the multiple symptoms that come together with PMOS.
It's so interesting that you talk about being listened to. I visited a specialist with one of my children the other day, one of four, and it was very interesting because it was a very short consult. It was less than 7 minutes. And I left there thinking, I still didn't tell you what the problem was. And only afterwards I thought about this, but while you're in the moment, I realized the only one that was speaking was the specialist. You know, so it's so interesting that you're saying, be heard in a consult and ask questions about what you are going through. And that's why this is so interesting for me, because PCOS has always presented itself with many signs. And I guess complications, no matter how severe or how simple it might be. But now you're right with the publicity and even the article that's readily available for us to understand and to learn from. We're going, oh my goodness, this is also about mental health. And I guess about our confidence because it's more than just our ovaries. When it comes to PCOS and fertility, we talk about it affects the whole body. I can't stress it enough. Doctor, if you had to pinpoint it on your hand, if we talk about PMOS, what does it affect? Go through it for me.
Okay, so let's start with the polyendocrine. There we have hair growth, hair loss, like not necessarily male pattern baldness, but hair, generalized hair thinning, acne. So this is the face, and then obviously the psychological part, for example, depression and anxiety and sleep disturbance. Then if we go to the metabolic, it can cause type 2 diabetes, it can cause high cholesterol, it can cause generalized cardiovascular risks that come together with a type 2 diabetes. If we go, it definitely insulin resistance, weight gain, and then on the PMR, the R side, on the ovarian side, it can cause abnormal menstrual periods, menstrual irregularity. It can affect your ovulation. It can affect your fertility. So it really is from top to bottom. It basically just ignores the feet.
Well, maybe in 1 year from now, we'll learn also about feet being. No, I'm kidding.
Probably.
God forbid, don't give us more symptoms, please.
Yes.
What role does weight gain, insulin resistance, and lifestyle? I mean, someone many years ago, a specialist said to me, lifestyle. I was like, what is lifestyle? My lifestyle is great, right? But
Yes.
are these all about managing the symptoms of PMOS?
Lifestyle plays a massive role. It can really, really help. And it all comes down to a certain extent to insulin resistance. And they actually showed that even just a little bit of weight loss can actually, to a certain extent, have an improvement on ovulation. So definitely, and also if the more, the worse the insulin resistance, the worse the acne. They just have an effect on each other. Muscle mass causes improved insulin resistance. So definitely lifestyle, it's a overused word, but it's a massive, massive driver in general health, especially with PMOS.
Can women with PMOS still have pregnancies? Can we still have babies?
Yes, many women with PMOS do conceive naturally, and many have natural pregnancies and very healthy babies, but some might need help with ovulation induction or maybe some fertility treatment, but it is very treatable. For me, the most important is preconception planning. So optimize weight op and get help. Get someone to help you, get your medical practitioner to optimize your health, your insulin, your vitamin D, your folate levels. Everything that is possibly optimizable beforehand will also assist. And also just when those patients are pregnant, generally the gynecologists look after them in a very particular way just to monitor for glucose abnormalities.
I like what you are saying in terms of optimizing. I was actually speaking to a dentist today, and I know that we've had many podcasts about dentistry in and how to take care of your oral health in pregnancy and even before pregnancy. But I love how you say, become the best version of yourself before even considering the baby. A lot of us want to be our best selves for the baby only, but we forget that we can also just be our best selves for us, So it's wonderful that you're saying optimize who you are or your health, prioritize that. Before wanting to conceive. So really valuable advice there. What support do women need? I mean, if I have PMOS, could you advise partner and perhaps healthcare providers, what kind of support am I looking for?
I think the most important step, whether it's a partner or a medical practitioner, is that your wife or your girlfriend or your patient needs, they need to be believed, and they need less blame, and they need more understanding. And also, psychological care should be first priority, not just an afterthought. You can imagine if you have acne and facial hair and you're doing everything correctly and nothing's working, you're not losing weight, you need to be heard. I think that in everything, it's probably the most important part. And also just reassurance, especially about body image, and fertility fears and intimacy. Women need clear explanations, and they deserve a proper assessment, especially for their metabolic and psychological health, because there is help out there. It's not that nothing can be done. But it needs to be found first.
Who does the diagnosis? I think I am suffering from something and I have all the symptoms of PMOS. Who makes the diagnosis?
Hopefully, firstly, you see this podcast on Ilana, and you realize that you might have the symptoms. And then usually people first go to their GP. Hopefully the GPs can make the diagnosis. And then if they are not certain how to manage it, it can do the baseline tests, refer to the gynae. But with all the information that we have available, your general practitioner should definitely already be able to get the baseline done and ready for you,
Yes.
just to get your general profile in a good place and give you guidance on what to do and what will help in general, and start the correct medication where needed.
I enjoy minerals. I mean, my family, thank God, we wash our hands and we love minerals and we eat healthy food. So we don't often get sick or feel ill, I see these minerals and supplements on shelf, and some of them are for PMOS. Would it hurt or harm anyone if you have it anyway?
Well, the most widely studied supplement for mild PMOS is inositol, which you can find in multiple preparations. No, it will not hurt. It will definitely help improve your general profile, your glucose profile. A healthy diet will do so much more, especially the Mediterranean diet has been proven to have the best effects because it's anti-inflammatory. But some patients need full-on metabolic support in the form of medication. So it should definitely be a step in the right direction, but not necessarily assume that that will cure all. Supplements are there to supplement to whatever you are using at that point.
What do you want every person to know about PMOS? I actually spoke to one of our receptionists about it today, and she said, "Ilana, I read the article, so I can't wait for the podcast." So I said to her, "Don't worry, it's coming on babybrunch.co.za." So I mean, what's the one thing? The one thing I would want people to know is that if there's a diagnosis, that it's fixable. That if you're in a place where you think that there's something wrong with you, chances are it's happening to most of us, and that it's curable, and that you're not alone. Doctor, if I had to be in your chair, in your practice, what's the one thing you would want to reassure me about?
That it is 100% treatable, That fertility, unlike what they sometimes read on the internet, that this does not mean that you are infertile. This does not mean that there is no help for you. And it does not mean that you have, there is no blame. You did not do anything wrong. And that there's a change happening. So I think this is the beginning. I think the statistics are also probably quite out because of the misdiagnosis in the past. So 1 in 8 is potentially going to change significantly because so many times patients sit in front of me and they say, but I have done everything correctly and I'm not losing weight and I'm not eating incorrectly, but I still have the acne. I want to just tell them that there is hope and that this, I suspect this is just the beginning. Women's health has boomed in the past few years because women are speaking up and they are demanding to be heard. And for the first time, studies are popping up about women's health all the time. So maybe I can tell them maybe next week we'll know something new and we will just share it on our Instagram. But it's an exciting time to be a woman. And it's an exciting time for women who haven't been heard in a long time because I think things are changing. And then, sorry, back to the PMOS. We can, there are answers, and there's wonderful new medications that make a really big difference, both for fertility and for the metabolic profiles.
Dr. Jonk, it's always great chatting to you here on Baby Brunch. Find more stories that also includes Dr. Jonk on babybrunch.co.za. A big, big thank you. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for the opportunity, Lana. It was wonderful.
Thanks so much for listening to this podcast. A quick thanks to our support. This podcast is supported by Epimax, the dermatologist-recommended skincare range specifically formulated to hydrate, soothe, and protect. Whether it's dry skin, sensitive skin, or just everyday moisture, Epimax has a solution for everybody. Fragrance-free, hypoallergenic, and suitable for all ages. Curaprox aims to create 1 billion healthy smiles. A healthy mouth means a healthy body and mind, creating better health for you. Great oral health starts from day one. It's never too early to start. Curaprox Baby gets your child on the right path of starting healthy oral care habits for life.